This time on Weather Brains, we look at the September 22nd severe weather outbreak in central Alabama.
We're lucky nobody was killed.
What went well during that weather outbreak? ABC 3340's SkyCam network, for one.
It sure is nice to be able to actually look at a storm with those cameras. You just can't beat that.
What didn't go so well?
The first warning was sprung on us rather abruptly that we didn't expect it.
We were out of practice, David. We were just not hitting on all cylinders.
How technology is changing severe weather coverage.
All of a sudden now, we've got people sending us video from all over, and that's going to make for some really fascinating coverage.
Also this time, the value of having sky watchers watching and listening for severe weather.
We really need that ground truth, and the more eyes and ears and people we have out there with some sort of capability to get that back.
And why is ABC 3340's weather coverage so popular?
We know it's not because we're good looking. We can rule that out right off the bat. When you consider...
I've never thought Brian's beard was all that attractive either. So.
Thank you.
Actually, there are some serious answers to that question, and you'll hear them coming up. Welcome to Weather Brains, the weather podcast all about, you guessed it, weather, put together by the folks with the Weather Company from Birmingham, Alabama. I'm David Black, thanking you for joining us. With us this time, James Spann, lead meteorologist with ABC 3340 in Birmingham. Hello, James. How are you, sir?
Hey, David, I'm doing great. How are you?
I cannot complain. The weather is gorgeous. We sure had a stormy, hostile weather weekend, though, over the past few days. We'll talk about that in a moment, but also want to say hello as well this time to J.B. Elliott and Brian Peters. Mr. Elliott, you staying out of trouble? All well?
Always, always.
And Mr. Peters, how about you?
Always in trouble, David. Always in trouble.
Well, you're always traveling, too. You're back from, where did you go, Missouri?
Springfield, Missouri.
And what was there?
The local emergency planning committee conference for Kansas, Iowa, Missouri, and Arkansas, as well as a couple of Indian nations.
Okay, I'll bite. What's the Alabama connection to that?
Stratus Station and SkyCams.
Ah, a very popular item at ABC 3340 these days.
Well, while you guys were involved with severe weather, we had a constant crowd around our booth. We normally have two laptops running, one monitoring a SkyCam we have on site, and one monitoring another SkyCam we have on site. Well, we chose to use one to monitor radar and one to monitor SkyCam in Alabama.
So this was just to give folks up there an overview of how this stuff works?
Correct. And boy, we had a crowd most of the day because we were flipping back and forth between radar in the Springfield area and radar in the Birmingham area. And when the tornadoes began down here, we had a lot of people. We were showing what the storms look like on the SkyCam and what they look like on radar. And it was a very excellent demonstration.
So the weather was perfect for the demo anyway.
Couldn't have asked for it to be any better for a demonstration.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize that the company that developed our SkyCam network are in Alabama, David. They're up in Hamilton. We actually took the idea to these folks because they had a camera and it was really good looking, and we had the idea of piggybacking weather data with it. So they came up with this really cool all-in-one contraption that's a SkyCam and weather observation instruments, and all comes back in one piece. And that's what we call the SkyCam network here. And I think it's cool that these guys are up in northwest Alabama. And I think they'll be extremely successful because every TV weather person that's looked at this, they've absolutely fallen in love with it.
Well, you guys are really, I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again because I think it's true. You guys are really on the technological forefront. So I'm assuming here that these cameras from these guys in Hamilton may well pop up in a lot of other parts of the country as the word gets out?
Yeah, I think you'll see them popping up in some amazing places. I know that Montgomery television station just ordered a bunch of them, and I just think we got to get back to pictures in the television businesses. And as you know, we had a severe weather event Friday evening. And again, you study how people watch television. They really focused on it when you start showing these live SkyCam shots. The radar is great, and it's a wonderful tool, but it sure is nice to be able to actually look at a storm with those cameras. You just can't beat that.
And speaking of looking at storms, I really looked at the severe weather episode in central Alabama over the weekend, James, as a tremendous test and a marriage of sorts of the technology that you have been helping to promote to folks through the television station. This seemed like a tremendous example of how you can interact with television viewers and let them be a part of the coverage process of severe weather. It was an amazing thing to watch.
It is a marriage, David. You're so right that our industry is changing so fast, and now our viewers and our readers and our listeners to this podcast are taking part in our television coverage in two ways. Number one, by sending us video and images while we're on the air. And, you know, with technology, boom, you just put it right up on the air. So all of a sudden we have videos and images from our viewers from these areas that are impacted by the severe storms, not only of damage after the storms pass, but of the storms in progress, wall clouds and, you know, funnel clouds and things like that. So that's one way. And the other way is that we now are using instant message technology, IM, to communicate directly with our readers. We built this team of sky watchers, and we do ask for those that join that they got some weather training, you know, severe weather spotting training, and Brian has trained many of these, and some experience, you know, in working in a controlled environment. I wasn't sure how that was going to work. We've had the IM conferences among ourselves and with the National Weather Service, but we opened up another conference with the people. We call them the Sky Watchers, and we've got about 85 now, and it was just great. We had people that were in the impacted areas. We had three F2 tornadoes in Blount County, which is just north of Birmingham for those people listening to other parts of the country. Some guy was up there in Blount County just passing information left and right. He had a scanner going. He was looking out the window at this stuff. It was just a tremendously successful adventure into the IM world.
And did you not have somebody, a viewer, snap a picture of a funnel cloud with a cell phone and send it in?
I'd say we probably had at least 20 videos from people that recorded them on a cell phone. And, you know, I didn't even know mine does that. I was playing with mine today and realized that I can do that with mine. And it seems like most of the newer ones can do that. And, you know, you can just email that video from your telephone. So people were emailing us cell phone videos, not just pictures, but videos from the middle of nowhere, you know, on the interstate and out in, you know, rural areas of the state. So all of a sudden now we've got people sending us video from all over, and that's going to make for some really fascinating coverage. It will be so much better in the next 10 years. You know, we've come a long way in 10 years with the aggressive weather coverage here, but now that the viewers are involved, it will only get better from here.
It seems to me as if in years past, the eyes of a television or broadcast and weather operation, the eyes were typically the people who worked in that organization. And now it seems as if the eyes are all the people that you're communicating with out there.
Just it really
is. Just a huge thing.
For any given severe weather outbreak, we'll have maybe 10 photographers working out in the field. And we have a vast market here, as you know, David, in terms of the geographical size from the Georgia line to the Mississippi line. And so instead of having 10 photographers, now we've got those 10 photographers, yes, and we've got these sky cams that we're putting up in many places that are great. And these are typically high on buildings or on mountains with these great views. And we've got literally thousands and thousands of people with their own eyes and with their own cameras and being able to use that in our coverage. I'm really excited to see where we're going to be in 5 years. I think it's just going to be hard to find a tornado that's not captured and gotten on television within minutes of the time it gets down.
Brian Peters, you used to work for the National Weather Service. What does this mean for Weather Service forecasters today, who in the past have really just had to rely on scant basic information to try and base a warning issuance decision on?
Well, what it means is they're going to have a much more additional information and hopefully accurate information. James touched on one item, and that is the need for training. Storm spotting is not something you take lightly and is not something you just go out and do because you think you have an image of a tornado in your mind. There's a lot to that, and a lot of the images that I've seen that have come into the address that James posts for weather pictures, a lot of them illustrate the problem spotters have because there's hills or there's trees, and we still need more storm spotters. And but the ground truth helps a great deal. You know, you got to keep in mind that radar is a tool I would never, ever give up But remember, the radar shows you what's going on in the thunderstorm, and it shows the broad-scale rotation. It does not show a tornado. So we really need that ground truth. And the more eyes and ears and people we have out there with some sort of capability to get that back, traditionally over the years, the Weather Service has relied heavily on law enforcement, public service agencies, but just like our camera people, there's only so many of those out there too. And in addition to that, amateur radio operators have provided the bulk of storm spotters because of their ability to communicate through radio communication. So this technological expanse of the general public is really showing up with what James is trying to do with the Sky Watchers, and I think it's marvelous.
Brian, let me ask you a question then. If you had been in the position of being faced with issuing a severe weather warning, tornado warning, whatever, and all you had was indications that the radar might be producing a tornado, would it be more valuable to you, Brian, to have that cell phone picture of a funnel cloud?
Oh, absolutely. My most confident times in issuing warnings in the Weather Service was when I had good solid ground truth on the thunderstorm that I was seeing on radar. Combine that with the signatures I'm seeing on radar. You put the two together, knowing what you know about the environment, and your confidence in your warnings goes up tremendously. And when your confidence goes up, you can be much more assertive in what you're saying in the warnings, and that helps people to realize how serious the situation is. So ground truth is just an absolutely essential element to be able to put out good warnings, the kind of warnings that will get people to seek shelter, that therefore, hopefully, will save lives.
Well, let me play devil's advocate with you guys for a second. There's something that does kind of come up as an issue to me, but I see you guys at 3340 already addressing this, and that is, if you're going to have this huge body of people out there with this fantastic reporting capability, you want them to have some training. You want that information to be valid. And you guys are already steering in that direction by really encouraging spotter training, such as what Brian gave during his days and years at the Weather Service, plus what he's giving right now, too. So is that an important part of the equation, James?
Oh, yeah. You know, it can be dangerous if you've, report bad information to us. And so as we build this team of folks that are reporting back via IM, we do ask if they've had Skywarn training and if they will be willing to regularly attend sessions. And we started our Storm Alert Extreme program a couple of years ago with Brian. We do this in the fall, and we don't make any bones about it. We don't try and cover it up. This is not a show. This is not a deal where, you know, you come in and sign autographs and get little doodads. I mean, this is just training. It's all that is. And accordingly, we are going to do that again this fall. And all of our Sky Watchers, those that are with us on the IM conference, will be invited to come and encouraged to come. And we know not everybody can make it, but we hope a large percentage of them can. And Brian will offer the basic and the advanced class. And we ask everybody go through both of those once a year, because we learn something new every year. And we plan to make that an annual event. And really, Jason Simpson had a good idea of our staff. We thought we might get together maybe once a quarter and just pick a barbecue restaurant in various parts of the state. And if you live within, 30 or 40 miles, come out and visit. So we're going to try and stay in touch and train them. And I really think that warnings will indeed be more accurate in years to come because of this information from these people.
So maybe the false alarm ratio, something you've expressed concern about in the past, might be able to drop a little bit?
I hope. Now, we don't issue the warnings. The Weather Service does that. And, they are aware of the FAR issue. And that's a problem all over the country. And hopefully, as we begin to get this information in real time, real time photos from the SkyCam network, the live video, the pictures from viewers, that will maybe enable somebody down at the Weather Service office, whether it's in Birmingham or Jackson or wherever in the country, and take a look at it and say, hey, there's nothing there. And that's one of the great things about this SkyCam. Friday, David, we were on the air. We had a tornado warning for Shelby County just south of Birmingham, and we had a camera looking right into the right rear flank of the storm, and there wasn't anything there. And they knew that you don't need to extend the warning. It's just not there.
Well, I've heard the good things about how that severe weather coverage went with you guys Friday and into Saturday. Let me ask you this. What needs to be worked on? I know this has got to be an ongoing learning process. What would you like to change or improve from what you saw Friday night?
Well, we had a disastrous day. I mean, I guess we're just talking between us girls here on the show, and maybe, thousands of people. But We were out of practice, David. We were a little, we were just not hitting on all cylinders. And we have not had a severe weather event of that scale in this market in a long time. And we had, Brian was on the road at the casinos. Where were you again, Brian?
Springfield, Missouri.
Oh, Springfield, Missouri.
Conference, not at the casinos.
The booby trap or the casino somewhere. And it was the, you know, we had three here in terms of the on-air meteorologist for 3340. And quite frankly, it started at a very odd time, David. I take a class at my church Fridays at midday, and I was down there when the first tornado warning was issued. Jason Simpson had gone home, and in his defense, the storms were not storms. They were just showers. We had no CG, no lightning on the board, and John was a block over, and thank goodness for that. John got over here, but the second the first tornado warning was issued for Winston County, we didn't have a warm body in the office. We had a researcher in here, Brian Mears, who does research for us, was in here, but in terms of an on-camera meteorologist, we didn't. Of course, the warning aired with this storm alert system, but it took John a minute to get down here, so that was not good. And we had a variety of equipment bugs and communication problems, and really I will take the complete blame for that because we have all been lulled to sleep by the lack of activity. So today I made a checklist of about 18 things that needed work, and we're going to get to work on them.
Well, that's how you fix things. JB, let me ask you about the severe weather event from Friday. What are your observations about how things worked with all the technology in place that people were using to send instant message reports and pictures and such?
Worked real good. The warning, the first warning was sprung on us rather abruptly that we didn't expect it. And there was a few minutes delay on getting everything up and rolling. But after it got up and rolling, I think it worked very good. I got tied up for about an hour and a half on wall-to-wall radio coverage, so I could not help out much with following, with forwarding any reports that I had on the instant messenger, but at other times, I think it just worked great.
That rings up something I've kind of wondered about. You guys, I don't know how many folks you'll have in the weather office at any one time during a severe weather outbreak, James, but everybody's got different functions, and it sounds as if, for the most part, all these different functions interweave with each other pretty successfully. So you count on JB to do certain things while you're on the air, and presumably Brian or Old Shoe, somebody else, is doing yet another duty.
I'm going to tell you, David, you know how it is. Back in the old days, back in the 80s, it was me and you. And, you know, back in the old days, the two of us didn't have to worry about the Internet and all this other stuff.
I think now, we had an Apple II Plus computer, was it?
I mean, we were big time, man. It was an Apple IIe.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, you're right. Everybody serves a function in typically in a standard outbreak where we know in advance it'll be a big deal. Brian is in the field with the Storm Chaser van. Old Shoe is in here with me. Jason Simpson is in here with me. And I almost have to have two people in the office now because one person has to run the sky cam and the radar. That in itself is a job that's incredibly busy. And the other person has to get all these images from people, the video and the pictures. And that in itself is an incredibly busy job. And then while we're busy with that, you got JB taking care of the blog and the radio stations. And JB can go hours, you know, wall-to-wall radio, which throws in Bill Murray into the mix because when JB is doing wall-to-wall radio, he's the guy that's got to update the blog and the tech stuff on the Internet. So with all these multiple distribution channels, if somebody's missing, it makes it even more complicated. So it's an all-hands-on-deck thing anytime something's going on here.
And it has no time to even get a sip of coffee during those times.
Yeah, it hasn't been that many years ago with the technology that there wasn't that much stuff to do. One or two people max could cover it all.
Oh, you know, we'd go on TV for a little bit and go right back off and go to programming. And all you needed was one person. But now it just doesn't work that way. And again, I should have had us in some drills. You know, you need to practice, and even when there's no severe weather, you got to practice this stuff. And it's kind of like Mission Control in Houston. They go through simulation after simulation for every launch they did, and we just haven't had a sim here in a long time. And that was, and we were thrown right there in the fire with all these hook echoes and tornado signatures. And we're lucky nobody was killed Friday. You know, we had three F2 tornadoes in Blount County, another one up in Marshall County just north of there, and The damage was pretty significant. But again, despite all the little bugaboos, the warning process did work, and the message got out, and everybody I talked to said they heard the warning. And you know, you can typically tell the system works when not even the print media can write tornado strikes without warning. I haven't seen that headline once. Have you guys?
Not in a while.
I haven't either.
So what's in the future, James? How do you plan for the future? How do you know what technology is going to bring and how you're going to integrate that into what you present to viewers for severe weather?
Well, you've got to stay ahead of it, and I think where we're going is a set-top box. Everybody's going to have a little set-top box, kind of like a TiVo. It's like this thing Apple is going to start selling in January of 07, their little box called ITV, and that's very important because once you've got that set-top box, you can take streaming content from the Internet and play it on your television. And I think the Internet is going to play an increasing role in how we disseminate severe weather information and how we can also offer these people that hate the weather coverage the programs that they want. And, you know, we always get our share of hate mail anytime you cut off a show, whether it's Wheel of Fortune or, you know, some Ginsu knife infomercial. Somebody's just going to be mad. And as the technology and the bandwidth increases online, we can stream all of this stuff at the same time, and people won't have to lose their program, which will be good for us. But I will say in the near term, David, the Internet streaming has become a crucial part of our coverage. Everything that, of course, we do on 3340 is available online. And you know how many people are working during the day where they television, but they've got their laptop or they're sitting in front of a monitor there at their a computer desk at work, and they can just punch us up on the Internet and watch everything. So that in itself is something that's very important, and that's not a futuristic thing. That's right now. I don't have the numbers from Friday night. During the primetime hour when the tornado was bearing down on Aniana, our numbers were really good. We were delighted with the numbers. We had more than, you know, you take our competition, we had more than those stations combined, which is always our goal. And they do a great job, our competitors here. But I just wonder if we could tack on the numbers we had on the Internet. I'm going to try and find that out this week, but I bet you...
Well, let me ask you something. Why do you think the numbers are so strongly skewed toward you guys? Is it just because of the multiple channels of information that you so aggressively provide and update? I don't see others in the market, and I'm not trying to throw a rock at anybody, but I don't see that being done anywhere else in the market. Let's just be honest.
Well, we know it's not because we're good looking. We can rule that out right off the bat when you consider...
I've never thought Brian's beard was all that attractive either. So.
Thank you.
We could be the ugliest group of people in television here. I mean,
ugly to look at, but the information's good.
Goofy to look at, you know?
Well, a bunch of goobers, that's what we are.
Goobers.
Geeks.
The uglier people are, usually the smarter they are, you know?
Well, let me ask you this. What was the response like? You always get emails after an event like this where you have extended coverage. Did you see any kind of a change in opinions, or was it kind of the same, or what did you see?
Well, and let me say this. I think one of the reasons we've been very successful in terms of the ratings, David, I didn't answer your question. We started first. I mean, I could say, you know, hey, it's, you know, we got J.B. Elliott. Everybody loves J.B., and they do. But I think a big part of it was that way back in the 90s, we were the first station in the market to do the aggressive weather coverage. So people got it in their brain. If it's a tornado warning, they can turn on our channel, and we're always there. Now, the other stations came late to the party, and quite frankly, I'm glad they did. That way everybody will get it, but I think that was a big part of it. And we are very aggressive, and you know, we always try and push the envelope with technology, and people know there's going to be something up our sleeves, and it's kind of like the ultimate reality television. Even if you're not in the county where the tornado's located, you know, people want to watch to see what happens. It's kind of like watching those car chase things in Los Angeles.
Right. And I want to get your answer to the email, but just a second. I want to jump to JB real quick while we're talking about this. JB, you're in the grocery store. You deal with people in places all the time who know your voice and your connection. What, in your view, is the reason why so many people rely on your team's coverage?
Because it's so thorough. It gets started early. It does not quit the ball game until the end of the fourth quarter, and get thorough coverage and very accurate coverage and continuing coverage. For example, when a tornado is suspected to be on the ground, I'm usually doing wall-to-wall radio, but James is on TV doing wall-to-wall TV with almost a play-by-play, like a ball game, where the tornado is and where it's going.
So you think it's just a a reputation then that's gained over time because people know they're always going to be there?
Right.
And I think I can add to that, David, my first real run-in, I guess you'd say, with James Spann occurred after the April 8th, 1998 tornado out there in that area of western Jefferson County. I was amazed. I was with the Weather Service then, and I was doing my job of surveying the tornado track and trying to come up with an F-scale rating, which James was pushing me real hard because he had the benefit of a helicopter, which I worked for the federal government, and I didn't have a helicopter. But anyway, the state police helped me out there. But I heard from a number of people, and of course, you know, I was identified as the Weather Service, but I heard from person after person after person, when we needed information, we switched around, and James Spann was the only one on. And that was before I was affiliated with 3340. And I think that commitment that our station has made to the central Alabama area, to our DMA, the counties we serve, I think that commitment really means that people know they can turn to us when the weather is threatening, and they can get the information that they need. Now, you're going to have those people, and I got one of those emails that James got that, you know, just raked us over the coals for the on-air coverage, the wall-to-wall coverage on Friday. But you get so many other emails that you just kind of drop those others off. But even back then, before I was associated with the station, it was very clear that the station was setting a bar that was going to be very high for anybody to meet.
I understand, and I appreciate the fact that you guys are honest enough to concede that things don't always go perfectly either, as James just said a few minutes ago. James, response to your coverage from over the weekend, what are you hearing?
Well, it's always a mixed message, David. You know, you look at email, and I try not to do that first. Our scorecard is the ratings, and, you know, how did you do? And again, my goal is always to have more than the other two stations that do wall-to-wall weather combined. And again, we have great competition. And look, the two of us, David, you and me, we were the guys at 13 for years. I mean, part of my heart will always be there. And I worked at Channel 6 for years, and part of my heart will always be there. I have many good friends at both stations, and they do a great job. But just because we got out there real early in this, you know, we want to stay aggressive, and we did really well in the numbers, and that's our measuring stick. The email is just kind of gravy, and that's sure not science, and we have to be careful with that. I try to shield a lot of this stuff from everybody else on the staff, because you're always going to have some knuckleheads that write really nasty ones, and the ones that are profane, I don't even read those. You know, they go straight to the delete file, but the ones that are really angry, they're typically from people that are trying to watch some show on TV, and I understand their frustration. And we do live in a self-centered world, and I fight selfishness every day. You know, I want what I want, and I want it now, and if I'm not going to get it, then, you know, we got a problem. And typically it's people that are kind of self-centered, and we get a little bit of that, but the number of nice emails is just wonderful. But again, I try not to put a lot of, you know, faith in that. I just look at the numbers. The numbers were sky high again this time, and for that we're very thankful. For a Friday night with high school football and you've only got one storm in a rural county, the numbers were just great.
Well, I think that says something. A couple of items in the news I thought I would pass along quickly if you guys had not heard about these just yet. The government is announcing it's going to supply hazard warning radios, which I think we can translate to weather radios, to all 97,000 public schools in the United States. The Homeland Security Department has now decided to provide $5 million to make sure these radios are in every public school. That's according to the administrator of NOAA, which is the parent organization over the National Weather Service. The distribution is expected to begin in October, should take a few months. NOAA's radio system covers about 97% of the country, with few gaps in some sparsely populated mountain areas. So, James, I would think you would feel like that's a good thing.
That's about time. That's great. I mean, you know, it is so refreshing to see finally somebody in the government putting an emphasis on that instead of sirens. Don't you agree, Brian?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's wonderful. You know, during my career with the Weather Service, I remember so many times PTAs and PTOs passing the hat to get a weather radio for their school. I think it's wonderful. This will put all the schools on a level playing field, hopefully, with all of them having one of the newer, same, the specific area message encoding models, so that they can let it sit there and only warn them when it's for their county, and not have, you know, get all upset when it's for a county that's 40 or 50 miles away. I think it's wonderful.
Well, maybe that'll keep people safe. I sure hope so. And another item in the news you guys may have seen, British billionaire Richard Branson announced on September 21st that he's investing about $3 billion, that's billion with a B, over the next 10 years to combat global warming and to promote alternative energy. Branson said he was inspired to contribute after meeting with Al Gore, who served as President Clinton's vice president and has been highly visible in raising awareness about global warming and environmental issues. $3 billion. I have to tell you guys, this is David Black on his soapbox.
Preach on, brother.
Not long, but just, you know what my immediate reaction and feeling was to that? It may surprise you. It surprised me. My immediate initial gut reaction was one of disappointment, letdown. I just had kind of a sick pit feeling in my stomach, and I didn't understand that at first. And a few seconds later, I did realize why I felt that way. From listening to so many of the climate research experts that we've talked with on this program and previous podcasts, it's very obvious. We don't need to go there, but it's very obvious that there is more than one side to the man-made global warming issue. And what I was thinking when I heard about Branson's commitment of $3 billion, the first thing that popped into my mind was, what if somebody devoted $3 billion to things like cancer research so that another woman would never have to die of breast cancer? Or if we devoted $3 billion to Alzheimer research or programs to feed and house poor people. There were just all these other needs that I thought could really be more deserving at this point. And you know what? Call me a tree hugger, but if I ever felt like there was a true, genuine threat to our environment, I'd be in the front of the line wanting to save the earth. But, you know, this is a political issue, and I think we've had enough people on this program help point out to us that so much of what we're hearing and reading about in the news media is political, and it is not scientifically sound information. And that's why I felt the way I did. End of David Black's soapbox.
That was awesome. I can't add much to that. And I tell people all the time, don't listen to any nitwit politician when it comes to global warming. And I'm talking Democrats and Republicans. If you're getting your climate information from a politician, you got to change your source.
Amen. And, amen.
You know, again, it's a bipartisan kind of thing here. That is just stunning, but you said it beautifully.
May I add something to this?
Have at it, sir.
Do any of you ever listen to Coast to Coast AM?
Art Bell's
Art,
old
yeah.
show.
Yeah, he's one of the guys, but the other night, he only does it about once a week, I think, and there are several other guys, but the other night they had a weather researcher on named Robert Felix, and he's got a website. It's called iceagenow.com, all one string, iceagenow.com. And he says it doesn't matter if the Arctic ice is melting, that it will not raise the sea level that much. And he insists that we're actually beginning to start an ice age. And he said a number of weather researchers and climatologists are coming on board to agree with him and to agree that that the global warming is happening, but it's cycle. And a bunch of his colleagues in Canada apparently petitioned the Canadian government to bail out of that worldwide organization that we did not sign on with. I can't think of the name of it now.
Kyoto Treaty.
Yeah.
Well, we will be hearing a lot more about this in the future. And I think that we probably need to mention from time to time, just because there is so much coverage and it's growing. It's just becoming exponentially larger and more dramatic and ominous sounding. And like I say, I love this planet, and I'd be first in line if I really truly felt like we've got a serious problem. But this is too political, and we've lost the science, and we've lost the reason in it. And I just see $3 billion that could be spent so much more effectively to do so much better in the world. But he's got the money. I don't.
For the people that aren't in this market, we're an ABC affiliate here, and on our instant message conference, one of the guys, Global Warming Alert on ABC, you know, they're one of the biggest proponents of this global warming thing, and they dedicated this huge chunk of World News Tonight to it tonight, you know, playing right down the political lines. refusing to give both sides of the story. And that's what disturbs me. And people have criticized us, and probably rightly so, for pounding this thing too much and beating a dead horse in this global warming thing. But we've had so many. How many guests have we had on here, David, that have been on the other side?
Quite a few. And that's why I feel the way we do, because we've talked to people who have no connection to each other. They're in totally different environments. They just have one commonality, and that is they do very serious scientific climate research. And when I hear so many of those different people all pointing in the same direction about the science of this, that's what bothers me, because they all are more or less, you know, saying that there's not any science to back up these alarmist views.
I think ABC's got some website where they want you to tell your global warming story of how global warming is ruining your life.
Yeah, and they want you to send in pictures that you think show that. So
why are they squelching the science side of the story is really disturbing. And again, the problem they got, from my perspective, if they're going to tilt that story about something we know about, what in the world are they tilting about things we don't know about?
Yeah, and the climate researchers that we've asked that question of, James, have when we've asked them, you know, why is the science side of the story being squelched, as you say, they come back and answer, because it's not dramatic. It doesn't encourage and doesn't produce funding. That's the answer from some of the people we've talked with. And to be fair about this, and I do want to be fair, this is not a show with a political agenda, believe it or not. We mentioned several episodes back that we would love to have former Vice President Gore on the program with us to talk about this and to answer some of our questions. And we did contact a spokesman for the former vice president, and I received word today from a spokesperson for Mr. Gore that, quote, "Unfortunately, we are not booking any new interviews for him just now," end quote. So the offer was extended to Mr. Gore, and he has, for the time being anyway, declined. And if he should ever change his mind and want to be on the program, the door's open.
Bring him on. We'll be right here.
Anything else, guys?
Well, David, I'd like to mention that you and I are working on a special interview for a future Weather Brains.
We hope it works out.
Yes, we hope to have an interview with some folks from Mount Washington, New Hampshire, one of the highest points, I think actually the highest point in the eastern half of the country.
That would be fun to have. And if we can make that happen, I'm guessing maybe in the next couple of weeks, if we're lucky, we can pull that off.
I hope so.
We have to chisel them out of the ice cube before we talk to them.
Yeah, chisel them out and get the wind to knock down a little bit up there. But anyway, very well, guys. Just a reminder, the opinions you hear expressed here on Weather Brains are not necessarily those of ABC 3340 Television. If you'd like to contact us, and you may want to after this show, who knows, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. If you'd like to leave a voicemail on our voicemail line, that phone number is 206-339-5482. 206-339-5482 for Weather Brains. For James Spann, Brian Peters, and J.B. Elliott, I'm David Black. We thank you for listening and hope that you'll be able to join us again for the next edition of Weather Brains. Weather Brains is copyright 2006, all rights reserved. Adios. Good show, guys. Thank you guys for the help.
Global warming is the politically correct name for summer.
You're a troublemaker, Peters.
Absolutely.
And the chili cook-off is a Saturday at Cheehawk. Anybody who wants to come?
Cool. What's that about? What's the chili thing?
They got a big arts and crafts thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Saturday. I'm the judge of the chili cook-off. So.
Oh.
So that's open to the public.
That's it, man.
You going, JB?
I don't know anything about it.
Well, you do now, so you better make plans.
By the way, if anybody checks out the IceAgeNow.com, I love the cartoon with the polar bear and the penguins.
Cool. All right, see you, boys. I'm out.
Bye, guys.
Over and out. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.